next thing that comes on, they've got this bloody video on Royal Mail, and they're playing flipping Postman Pat over the bloody top of it. This is 10 minutes before flipping kickoff. This is the point in time where they need to be really trying to ramp up, you know, crowd and atmosphere. And it's like, you're playing Postman Pat.
Postman Pat, Postman Pat, Postman Pat, Postman Pat and his black and white cat.
One game, one goal, one clean sheet and one win. 2016 starts up on the right note for the Royals, but they made the Badeski wait for it against Bristol City. We'll look in detail at the win that shook off the Christmas gloom as Brian McDermott levelled up his record with two wins and two defeats. Plus, as the transfer window opens, Pub Chat will take a look at which areas Brian needs to bolster and who should be sent packing. All that, plus plenty more, on this week's Tarless Den podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. And first of all, a very happy new year to all of our listeners. Hope everyone had a fantastic Christmas and a nice festive time. Thanks very much for joining us again as we start, I think this is our third or fourth year now doing the show. Start of 2013, I think I took this over.
Wow.
From you, Westy?
You did.
From the Royals Post. So that kicks off a nice new era. I said Westy is with us. Hello.
Yep, I'm with you again.
You are with me again.
Yes.
You've stuck around.
I will stick around.
Into this, probably your seventh year now podcasting.
Yeah, I know. Getting a bit much, isn't it?
A little bit. And joining us as well this week, Mr. David Handbags Harris. Dave, hello.
Hello. I'm feeling slightly underwhelmed now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, this is your second year now. So, you know, building up the appearances as well. Only 8 years away from that testimonial.
Getting there.
Bit of new blood. It's good.
Indeed. Well, speaking of new blood, you might hear a little bit of a difference in the audio quality tonight. And that is thanks to your own donations. We put out an appeal a few weeks ago and people have very kindly been donating over the past few weeks. In particular this week, Mourinho, Alex Forbes and Stuart Keeble have all helped pitch in. There will no doubt be some audio hiccups and little bits and pieces today. It is going to be very much a work in progress as we figure out the best way to record using all our fancy new equipment. So please do bear with us.
It's the first time I've seen two mics on the show as well. So well done there, Wim.
Yeah, well, you know, we're trying. But as I said, if you can't hear people and it sounds a bit tinny or a few echoes and stuff, bear with us. We're still an unprofessional joke for podcast at heart.
Don't write in.
Yeah, you can spend all the money you like on it, but you can't buy professionalism.
Of course not, no.
We might have to bring in new hosts or something. But yes, thank you very much to all of those who have continued to donate. If you head over to tarlessden.com and want to pitch in, we're still looking, as I said, for more money. We hope to get better and better and as we get new techniques, new equipment and all that fun and games. So as I said, thanks very much for sticking with us. In the meantime, we've got a lot to cover. We've not been on air since just before Christmas and the whole game, before Brian McDermott had even been appointed manager. Hope you've managed to last through Christmas without us. We did give you a Shaka Hislop podcast, which I haven't really had too much time to say on it, but I know I did it and I'm biased, but I thought Shaka was brilliant.
That was 5 years in the making, that interview as well.
Yeah, did you get, were you trying to line him up?
Yeah, I did have it lined up, but he was at his cousin's house or something, and we missed each other. So, yeah, so well done, Wim, finally tracking him down.
Yeah, well, I can only thank one of our listeners again for putting us in touch. So, yeah, if you haven't checked that out, it is well worth your time. I said, I know I'm biased, but it's 45 minutes. He speaks very candidly about a range of topics from his time at Reading to Trinidad and Tobago issues, and also what was his biggest disappointment in football. And the answer might well surprise you. So, I said, stick around for that. In the meantime, I said, we've got a lot to cover. Let's get on to the recap.
From the Tarless Den, recapping this week's championship action.
Okay, gents, so as mentioned, we last spoke before the for Christmas, before the Hull game. Westy, you couldn't join us. You had a late panto commitment.
I did, yeah. It was a big, big issue with a panto, so I had to go to that, I'm afraid. Sorry about that.
Was it an unprofessional joke for a panto?
It was, yes. It was one of the worst unprofessional jokes for a panto I've ever seen.
What about your young'un? Did they star?
He was particularly appalling.
Oh, no.
No, he wasn't. He done very well.
Oh, well done. But anyway, yeah, we all gathered at the pub. Again, apologies to the second half of that podcast. Speaking of audio quality, we couldn't help the very fact that the Spread Eagle wanted to show the Leicester-Chelsea match.
It's always a worry when you go to the Spread Eagle, especially on match days.
Well, we'd spoke to them before and they very kindly turned the music down and stuff in our area. But unfortunately, the pub started to fill up. And as much as, you know, 10 blokes recording a podcast brings in a few coins, it can't really compete with couple of dozen other punters who want to watch the match. So,
no.
But, you know, hope to add to the atmosphere. That'll be a historical document now, because that was Mourinho's last game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, listen back to the end of the Mourinho era. Anyway, speaking of eras, just after we recorded that show, the Brian McDermott era officially began. So everybody went up to Hull under caretaker Martin Cole. They lost 2-1 in a game they really didn't deserve to come away with nothing from. Brian then took over, guided them to a 1-0 win over Blackburn. We then lost 1-0 at Wolves on the telly. And then lost at home to Brentford. But this past Saturday. We beat Bristol City, and we'll spend a fair amount of our time now talking about that Bristol City win. But first of all, gents, what did you make of the festive period in all?
Go on, David, go first.
Hey, very positive, actually. You know, we've had two defeats. But all told, I don't think we deserve to lose either game. With a bit more clinicism in front of goal, a bit more savvy, getting the ball in the right areas, and actually pressing the shoot button rather than trying to get the ball on our strong foot, I think we could and probably should have got something out of both games. Certainly didn't deserve to lose them, and I'm quite pleased in many ways with the way that we're playing. While it's not exactly what you call all there, that will come with time. It's still a lot more progressive, a lot more direct, a lot more enjoyable to watch, because we're actually going out and we're attacking teams every given possible opportunity.
Westy,
I like it.
In all, from those five games, we won two, lost three, took 6 points. Was that an acceptable tally for you?
I don't know if the tally is acceptable, but like Handbags just said there, I think when you've watched them over the last couple of weeks, they've looked good without scoring, and hopefully the goals will come. And once they do, I'll turn optimist when it comes to this side. Once they do start scoring, they look a very good side. It's just putting a ball in there, and I think we found that in the Bristol game as well, that we sort of dominated the game without looking like we was going to score. Well, Vidra could have had an hat-trick in the first half, but other than that, and the Wolves away, how they come away with that about a point, God only knows.
Yeah. Well, in lots of these games, they've been recording shot tallies in around the 20 mark. You know, we've been getting 20-odd shots, but, you know, only three on target, and Reading are still got one of the best shots ratios in the entire Football League and Premier League. I think there was a stat just before the Bristol City game that we were in the top five. Mm. We've got one of the worst conversion rates. So they're having more pops. And that was one of the things that fans were getting impatient with in previous years, that players weren't actually prepared to give it a go. But we're giving it a go, but we're just not getting it on the target.
No, and again, I still don't think we're getting enough players in the box at crucial times. But again, I think that'll come. I mean, he's had a good look at them now. And like I said, they've got all the attributes to be a good side. It's just putting a ball in there they seem to be struggling with.
Yeah. The Brentford game, that was the most frustrating one for me, especially in front of their home fans. I mean, to lose a game like that to two, I mean, you know, hats off to Brentford. They were two brilliant goals. I mean, I thought Woods, they should have closed him down a bit, but the second one from Canos, yeah, just fantastic.
I mean, the first one, I don't think anyone see that going in from that range. It was an absolute worldie. And
I spoke to Billy Grant of Besotted afterwards, and he said that he'd scored one in something like 250 games, and that's his second goal for Brentford. Yeah. You can't legislate for that, really, in many ways.
Yeah, I think he got a lot more coverage than it otherwise would have, because he was a Liverpool loanee. There was a lot of superlatives thrown out.
It was a great strike. It was a really good goal. But I say, you hit them 100 times and one goes in. Just on that day, that's the one that went in.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's move on then to the main event of this week's show, that 1-0 win over Bristol City. It was far from pretty. I had the benefit of being hospitality for this one, gents. So I got a nice padded seat, at least, to watch the action from. But
sold out.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I wish. But we did win the quiz. We did win the quiz in there. Mm. So, you know, use that Tyler Sten knowledge to good use.
There you go.
Cash prize?
No. It was some Reading shampoo and some body wash.
Yeah, this is Reading. There is no cash prizes.
There is only the Golden Gamble, which we got absolutely nowhere near. But anyway, yeah, 1-0 win. As you mentioned, Westy, Matty Vidra could well have had a hat-trick in the first half of this. He was one, you know, he was one of few to keep their place from the Brentford game. There were lots of changes. Orlando Sarr restored. He got his first start under Brian McDermott. Lots of changes as well. Stephen Quinn came in on the left. Nick Blackman was pushed out to the right. You had Jake Cooper in for the suspended Michael Hector. And Andrew Taylor came back in at left back. What did you make of the shape of the team?
I thought it was good. I like Quinn in midfield. I think we're a better side when he plays further forward. Again, you can't knock his work rate. It's fantastic. I thought they looked well. To be fair, Bristol City didn't have a lot up front. I thought it was going to worry them. They didn't have any real pace. They were no problem to Reading, really. It was good. It wasn't good. It wasn't a good game by any stretch of the imagination, but I always thought Reading were comfortable in the match. It just didn't look like, again, the goal was going to come, and then right at the end, we managed to grab it. But yeah, the shape was good. Like I said, I never thought we was going to lose the match, but at most of the points, I didn't think we was going to win it either, even though it was comfortable.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much sums it up. It didn't help that we conceded a lot of the ball to Bristol City, particularly in the second half. I mean, they had the extra man in midfield, which always tends to leave the ball dropping to one of their players rather than one of ours. But at the same time, you know, the back four comfortably dealt with Wilbraham and Kodja. And we still created chances, particularly in the first half. You know, Matej Vidra, as you said, could have had... We had three very, really presentable opportunities, two of which he should have put away.
Yep.
Two of which he should have got on target. And, if there was going to be a winner, it was only ever going to be one team, and it was only ever going to be us.
Do you think Brian McDermott, I mean, the other big change he made was bringing back Ali Al-Habsi for Jonathan Bond. Do you think he's still at the stage of giving players a chance, or do you think he's already made up his mind on some players?
I'm not sure. I mean, I listened to an interview he gave last week, and he was saying that they were saying about some of the fringe players, Fernandez and Atardo, that not getting a match as he had a chance to look at them. And his reply was, I don't know these players. So I think he's sticking with what he sort of knows at the moment, and then maybe in the FA Cup match he'll get a chance to have a good look at him.
Maybe. Hence the reason why he played Hal Ross and Cano up front for the first two games. He knows the player.
I thought it was funny that Saar wasn't getting a game, and especially because after, I think, the Brentford game, he came out and said, oh, Hal's not really had a chance to train. He's given me 2.5 games in the space of 8 days.
Yeah, not only that, he brought the young lad on as well off the bench, didn't he? And I thought that was a bit of a surprise with Saar sat on the bench.
Yeah, Rowan Lybert.
But again, he's gave him a match this week, and he's done very little to impress anybody, I would have thought. So if you're not going to play when you're in the team, then that's what's going to happen.
I don't think it helped that the setup and the opposition particularly helped us play to Saar's strength. You've got to get the ball into Saar's feet. And funnily enough, the one time we did that in the first half, it directly led to one of Vidra's three presentable chances.
Yeah, he's a good player, Saar, don't get me wrong. But I just said, well, when he's obviously been out the side, he wasn't out the side, but he was out the side before McDermott came along. So, again with Saar, he had the same sort of problems when he played in Poland, that he scores goals, but his temperament's a little bit questionable sometimes, I think.
Yeah, well, he's got one goal since he scored those four against Brentford and Ipswich, and just generally not doing it. I mean, you know, people had a go at Pog and said, oh, he doesn't do enough. But the more you see how people like Saar struggle, you appreciate what Reading strikers have had to deal with in the last few years, which is scraps.
Yeah.
I know Matty Vidra, you know, we said it a few times now, has had a few chances, but generally these big target men have been asked to do a job. You know, they've not been put in a position where they're likely to score 10, 15 goals a season. And it's credit to Saar that he managed to get that hat-trick against Ipswich, but ever since that red card, though, it's just not clicked.
He does tend to come wide a lot as well, I've noticed with Saar. He does tend to run the channels quite a bit. Especially on the left-hand side.
But again, all Reading strikers have done that. I mean, the amount of times you saw Pog hanging out on the left-hand side.
Yeah, I'm just noticing that he tends to do that rather than sort of staying as a main central striker. I mean, Vidra's had some really good chances the last couple of weeks. He probably should have had at least 3 or 4 goals over the last 2 or 3 games.
Yeah, he did make a key impact at the end, which we'll come on to in a minute. But while we're speaking of wide players, Nick Blackman out on the right, guys. I thought, personally, that was probably the worst I've seen from Nick Blackman this season. I know he pops up and gets the winner, but he looked a little bit uninterested. He looked like he didn't want to play a traditional wingers game. You could tell Chris Gunter was getting frustrated with him, running past him all game and never getting the ball.
It was the Blackman of old, wasn't it? I don't know what, before the game I was talking to a couple of people, and I was actually advocating Blackman should be dropped. I don't see him. I still don't see him as a central striker, but I don't see him as a wide player either. And it's kind of weird because, you know, he's our top scorer, and I'm saying got to be dropped.
He doesn't fit a traditional position. For me, he is perfect. If you play a 4-3-3, you play him in one of those wide slots, either side of a forward.
Yeah.
Preferably on the right, so we can cut in and use his left. But you can't really do it in a 4-4-2. And he's not, it's, as we saw on Saturday, he's not really suited to being a traditional winger. Wesley, what would you do with him?
Yeah, again, it's a difficult one. He scored when he went up front, so that had everyone calling for the fact that he should be up front all the time. But if you notice the position he scored from, it was the same position he was in most of the match anyway.
Yeah.
The only surprise to me was that the player let him go in on his left side, because their manager said at the end of the game that we spoke about all week about the Reading wingers and how they were going to cut in on their stronger foot, which is left for Blackman. And it was that mistake that cost them the game in the end, because if they had just kept him on his right, they knew he had no purpose on the right. He never even tried to go down the right-hand side the whole match. So they had him pretty sussed out. It wasn't until McCleary came on, really, that he started taking him on down the right-hand side. It caused him all sorts of problems.
Did he make the right subs for you? I mean, you just mentioned McCleary coming in, changing the game.
Won the game, didn't we?
Again, you can't argue with it when they win the game. Yeah, I think he did make the right substitutions. There wasn't anything I complained about. Let's put that.
No, I mean, one of them was obviously enforced with Paul McShane having to go off. It looked like a calf problem, being replaced by Anton Ferdinand, who he himself, no stranger to injuries, but he did make it through the game. I thought he played quite well alongside Jake Cooper, who picked up the sponsor's man of the match. And he wasn't my man of the match, but I couldn't argue with it.
No, he wasn't my man of the match, but I thought he was steady. And again, we said before that we've been poor from corners over the last 160 corners now, is it? We haven't looked like scoring from. But at least with Cooper on there, you know that you have got a goal for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we talk about the goal. Obviously, Blackman gets it. Matty Vidra, who has missed that hat-trick of chance, he's come in for some dreadful criticism. You know, I don't like calling out fellow pundits, but Tim Deller, to call him useless, he said it was absolutely useless.
Resign.
Yeah,
resign, Tim, if you're coming up with that. I mean, seriously, to call quite frankly the best player on the pitch not the most talented player on the pitch, absolutely useless, is ridiculous. I'd be worried if Vidra didn't show any willingness to work. I'd be worried if Vidra didn't end up in the right position to score consistently. He always has chances. Yes, he should have scored, but, you know, if he keeps on getting in those positions, the goals will come.
Yeah, I can't disagree with any of that. I thought Vidra, throughout the game, was excellent. It was just his finishing that was poor. So to say that he was useless was wrong. And again, when he's at his best, Vidra, he sometimes can be unplayable. And the good thing about it, when he's not at his best, you never see him give up. And I think any fan appreciates that.
Yeah, and that is exactly what we saw on Saturday. You know, I said he had a miserable first half. He knows he should have scored those chances. Yeah. And he knows he should have done more for the club. But he keeps working hard. And for a striker to be halfway inside his own half in stoppage time, for his lone club, putting in a tackle like that that sets off the move, he gives it to McCleary, he plays Blackman through. I thought it says it all. You know, you can slag off certain loanies all you want, Pearson. But one thing you can't accuse Matty Vidra of is not trying. And I can understand why in the heat of the moment after a game that we'd lost at Wolves where we should have won, that someone like Della goes and criticising him. But I think useless was too strong a word. And I think he knows that deep down. I think he's hopefully seen enough football to know talent when he sees it. If you're talking useless, I said on Twitter earlier, you need to talk about Paul Brayson, Paul Bowden, players like that. They were the true useless players, not someone that's been named the Championship Player of the Season.
No, there's more improvement in Vidra. He is a good player. He just, if he scores a couple, I'm sure he'll go on a scoring spree. But at the moment, it just seems like nothing's going to go in for him. Or if it does, it seems to come off his shin and fly in, you know what I mean?
He needs that tap-in like he had against Brighton, I think. He just needs one of those little six-yard tap-ins that where it, you know, it just drops to his feet, he bundles it in off his knee or what have you, and I think he'll be away.
The problem is his price tag, and that's what everyone points to. Well, where can you pay $2.5 million for players not scoring goals for him? You know, I mean, that's whatever we're going to come down on him, but I think that's harsh. If he had someone next to him that's banging in the ball in every week, we wouldn't even be having this debate, but we're not. Yeah. So.
It's not his fault, the price tag is what it is.
Yeah,
no,
that's right.
And he's come, if you consider where he's come from a Watford team that have got a very settled style of play. He's had a partner, and you only have to look at what Troy Deeney's saying on social media every time Reading are on the telly, and he's infuriated by the fact that Reading aren't picking up these runs from Matty Vidra. You come from an environment like that to a Reading team, a constantly rotating cast of partners, constantly rotating formations, constantly rotating form, even a manager's change. So, do you have to have some sympathy? Obviously, he's not immune to criticism. And I said, he'll know he has to do better, but hopefully he'll kick on. Because we were all sat on this very show at the start of the season saying he's the difference maker. And I don't think anything's changed in the last 4 months to make me think any otherwise.
No, I think what McDermott said recently was interesting as well, is about the team having an identity, and they haven't got an identity at all at the moment, because again, we've got a lot of lone players in. But I think if you can get that team settled and everyone knowing what everyone else is doing, no injuries, I think it'll turn around pretty quickly.
Yeah, a couple of other instances just before we move on. Number one, Bristol City fans who held on to the ball, you are morons. I'm saying it right now, you know, fun and games and all that, but come on, 5 minutes into a game, behave.
Saying that, they're on a bit of a poor run of form. Maybe they were trying to waste time from the beginning.
And it's a very small minority of what were a fantastic group of fans. I thought they were very noisy. They backed their team well. And as you mentioned, they're in poor form. But that little group in the far corner, not for me. The other one as well, speaking of Bristol City and not going down too well, Steve Cottrell, gents, getting into a bit of bother with one Mr. Blackman.
I don't even know what went on.
Yeah, what was it all about?
Well, from what I have seen, and both in coverage post and during the game, Blackman was wound up by something. I don't know what, if Cottrell had done something or whatnot, if there was history from the Ashton Gate game. But basically, Blackman squirts him with water when there's an injury right at the end of the first half, which gets a few jeers from the West Stand. And then after Blackman scores, he sprints over to the dugouts and gives an absolute torrent of abuse and taunts towards Cottrell. You can see he's basically had to be held back by his teammates, and Brian McDermott even comes onto the pitch saying, you know, come on, get away from this. Now, there are unconfirmed reports of problems in the tunnel after the game. You know, there have been no official word on this from either the officials or either team. Apparently Cottrell was asked about it and he said, you're going to have to ask Nick Blackman on that. So, you know, the old football code of silence seems to have prevailed here. So I have no idea what actually happened, if anything happened at all, but just a bit nasty, but you can understand why someone like Nick Blackman might get under your skin.
Yeah, definitely. But again, it all adds to the drama of the stuff.
Of course it does. I just want to go back to that. You're going to have to ask Nick Blackman about that, as though he's entirely innocent in this. Clearly he's not, if he's saying something like that.
Well, as the manager, he needs to take the higher ground. But to be fair, from what we actually saw on the day, he kind of was taking the higher ground. He, you know, it was Blackman that did run over to him at the full after the goal. There was no need to do that, really. You've just won the game.
Yeah, he didn't react to it at the time, did he? Maybe he did give him an earful in a tunnel, but at the time
he did
didn't.
Look on the camera that it was like, eyes forward, I'm not yeah. getting involved. Don't even look at him.
I don't want to fine.
Anyway, well, we've not heard anything about referee's report or anything, so it looks like if anything did happen, it's by the by. So we will move on. A few tweets on the game from a couple of people. Well, just one really, just wanted to bring up now. Anyway, Chris Hartley, who joined us on the Christmas show, he asked, over the Christmas fixture list, did we pick up the amount of points we deserved?
No.
There we go. Fairly emphatic. That just about wraps that one up. Right, we'll move on now to some news bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So as with most things, the news kind of slowed down a bit over the festive period. There wasn't a lot to report on other than, you know, the whole new manager arriving at the club and things like that. But hopefully you've caught up with most of the news over the past couple of weeks. As I said, the Tarlhurst End kept going over the holidays. The podcast may have taken time off, but our dedicated team was still hard at work. I don't give them any time off. Very Scrooge-like.
Yeah. Don't pay them either.
No. No way. You know, they were given an extra piece of coal on Christmas Day.
Probably more than they deserved.
Indeed. That's the sort of approach. Do you interested in a job?
Oh, yeah.
I need an enforcer.
Yeah, okay. I'll do it.
Like it. Right, anyway, some of the bigger news stories. Obviously, Brian McDermott was appointed as manager, and he named Terry Burton as his assistant. But Mr. Burton has decided after 2 weeks that the job's not for him. He's walked away, the former Wimbledon manager, just saying he's going to work on other projects. So,
it's a strange one.
Thanks for coming, Terry.
It's a strange one, though, isn't it? It's a weird one, that.
It's a bit odd. Didn't John Gorman leave fairly sharpish?
Yeah, but
I apologise.
I think there was also a gentleman's agreement that when Glenn Hoddle got a new job and he did it at Southampton, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That John Gorman was going to go and work with him, and that's what happened.
Okay, fair enough. But yeah,
Mad Dog.
Yeah, well, Terry's gone. Taking his chocolate orange with him. And in his place has arrived Chris Davis. Now, the name might twig if you followed our academy back in the day. He was a highly thought of prospect in our youth system, but had to retire at the age of 19 due to injury. Then took time out, went to uni, did coaching badges and things like that, and pitched up with one person he knew from the academy called Brendan Rodgers. He gave him a job at Swansea, took him with him to Liverpool, and he stayed there until Rodgers got the axe a little bit earlier this season. So he joined. Apparently he's very into his technical side of things, which will be unsurprising, given that he worked with Mr. Rodgers. But he's joined. So the coaching staff at the moment, Westy's pretty young with him and Stephen Reid on there.
It's quite a change as well, isn't it? From Terry Burton, obviously an older sort of old school manager, and then a young coach coming in. I think it's a good thing. Again, he knows Reading. He's obviously had a good grounding at Swansea and Liverpool. And if McDermott thinks he's good enough to come back and do a job, then I'm sure he is.
Yeah, just 30 years old. So it's very much on the young side of things.
Great. Good luck to him.
Yeah, very much so. Can't really say much more on that. Apparently he's good at set pieces, which is very good considering that, as we touched on earlier, our record from corners is absolutely woeful.
Let's hope so. If we score one this season, well, the rest of the season, then he's already done a job. So.
Well, I've got to ask, did you have money on Jake Cooper on Saturday? Gamble away.
I did, yes.
Yes, so did I.
I've had money on McShane all season, and now I'm so stuck on the bet that I can't change it in case he actually does score or even look like scoring.
I'd save you money.
Yeah, so would I.
Speaking of returns, three youngsters have returned for sure. Those being Jake Taylor, Aaron Cole and Simon Cox. Dominic Samuel and Craig Tanner are also back, though it's looking a bit more likely they'll be returning to Plymouth and Gillingham respectively. But for Taylor, Cole and Cox, they're all back. Jake Taylor made 8 appearances up at Motherwell. Aaron Cole, 7 at Dundee United. And Simon Cox only got off the bench 4 times with Bristol City. Didn't even get a start. Do any of those three factor into your plans for the next 6 months, Westy?
I don't think so, no. I can't see any of them. Cox has, don't know what's happened to his career, it seems to be collapsing around him. I see you've put on this sheet, he's still just 28. I thought it was 28 appearances in the last 5 years.
I thought he was much older than that, just he seems to have been around for so long.
Yeah, he does, but again, he can be a good player. I don't understand why he's struggling so much. And Cole and Taylor, I think, they still need another good year, at least 30, 40 games away from Reading before I can see him getting anywhere near the team.
Not entirely sure Taylor's going to get that year because he's out of contract at the end of the season,
yeah,
isn't he?
I think he's peaked, unfortunately. Yeah. I'm sorry, Jake, if you're listening. I do wish you all the best, but I think we've seen that he's a good utility player, works very hard, but he's just limited.
He's not going to lift the club higher, is he? He's just going to fill in, and I don't think we need them sort of players. We've got plenty of them.
No, Cole's got a lot more potential in him, obviously. He's been very highly thought of. He's had a bit of a rough year. Obviously, that move to Mallorca fell through. Then he went up to Dundee United, and he's played for the worst team in the Scottish Premiership. And that's
quite
never easy.
Way.
Yeah,
quite a long way.
John Keane, who writes for us, he went up to see him up in Scotland and said he was plonked right in front of the back four and asked to do a screening job. Yeah. Which just isn't his position. It's not his role. He's more of an Oliver Norwood.
Yeah, and again, we've got plenty of midfielders at the club at the moment, so I can't see him breaking through anytime soon, unfortunately for him.
Just on Cox, though, as well, Dave, you know, I've put he's just 28 as well. Last season, he was involved in more league goals for Reading than any other player. 12, which I know we had our worst league season in a while, but I can't get over the nagging feeling that he might have something to offer under his old boss.
Yeah, I don't mind him as a player. I thought last season he showed enough to be a regular. Well, obviously he was a regular. I thought Clark obviously didn't fancy him. Yeah, he wasn't a regular in the back end of last season. But there's enough to him to be a regular championship forward. And you know, it goes with no surprise that under the right type of football and the right type of manager, you know, Nigel Adkins, you know, for all his limitations at Reading, brought out in many ways the best out of Cox. And what was he, 7 goals, 8 goals? And that was by the end of December. Now, he didn't score after that.
Yeah. It hasn't scored at all in... he didn't score at all in 2015. He can't now. Let's get to time machine.
No, and again, he's a player... He's not a bad player. I don't understand why he seems to be struggling so much.
He scored some great goals as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, he scored an excellent goal the first part of last season when he had the ball on halfway line, took a run and blasted one in. Yeah, it was a fantastic goal.
The instinctive strike against Rotherham as well.
He's got it in him.
Yeah.
Whether he can produce it again.
And he played well. I think his last really good game was one of Clark's first. That game where we beat Norwich here. I thought he played really well alongside Glenn Murray.
Scored.
But he needs the right type of striker alongside him. And I just don't think he's getting
He's not an out-and-out striker, is he? That's the thing. He needs an out-and-out striker alongside him. And we didn't have that last season. We had someone who was able to support him, and the majority was Pogrebniak, wasn't it?
Mm.
And the main. But... technically he's very good. He's quick. He's skillful. I think, you know, give him regular football, he'll be. He's a very good player.
Yeah. The only thing is that obviously he's going to be on fairly substantial wages, you'd imagine, and it's just whether a case of if Reading want to, you know, cut bait, because I suppose that, you know, the temptation is to get that money out. You know, we're going to talk in pub chat about bringing in reinforcements, but you've got to get rid of players to bring them in. You know, the club has still got to run itself on a fairly financially sustainable level. So,
what do you think you'd ask for him if he was Reading? If he was someone to come and buy him?
Well, I think his contract's up in the... Is his contract up in the summer or is it next summer?
I think it was a three-year contract, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it's certainly might have been longer than a year and a half. Like so,
half a million, you think you might get for him?
Maybe.
I'd snap somebody's hand off for half a million. You know, he's a good player, but at the same time...
His stock is low at the moment.
Cox at his peak, I think, is better than a 500 grand player.
Not at his peak, though, is he?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is he's 28. I don't think he's past it. I don't think he's, you know, you're talking about a 33-year-old and you're just saying, oh, well, you know, he's had his best years, he's done. I think there's every chance he gets back to that.
You think if he stepped down the league, someone in the league below would think, hang on, this player scored a lot of goals this winter when he was there, maybe.
But the problem you've got at this level, he's not scoring a lot of goals. And if there's four players and they're not scoring a lot of goals, then the price isn't generally that high.
No, his stock's low, that's what I'm saying at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's rock bottom. This is probably the lowest point he's been in his career. Well, ever since he wasn't getting into Reading's team, because ever since then he went to Swindon, scored goals, got a big move to West Brom, did quite well at Forest, obviously came back to Reading, started well there, and it's just all fallen apart since then. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I said we'll talk a little bit more about transfers in just a few moments' time, but we'll just round out News Bites with congratulating Ollie Norwood. He's picked up the Tyler Sten Player of the Month for December, follows up his win in November, and interestingly enough, he won exactly those months last year, and rather unfortunately his career sort of dropped off for the rest of the season. So hopefully, not the same this time. But he's been, we talked about it in the awards, about players of the first half of the season. And, you know, he is probably, without a doubt, the player of the season for me. So I know people talk about Nick Blackman, but in terms of overall consistency, Oliver Norwood's been fantastic.
Yeah, I think he's improved this year from last year as well. He's doing a bit more of the dirty work, I think it was a little bit earlier, sort of last year, we're saying that he wasn't prepared to put his foot in, but now he certainly is doing that. So
he's the pivot point of the team as well, isn't he? He's been given a role, and the team is formed around him.
Yeah.
And that really helps a player. It gives a player confidence when that happens.
His range of passing is excellent as well, you've got to say that.
Yeah. He picked up the awards. Stephen Quinn was second, and I think Anton Ferdinand came third. So
I think Stephen Quinn, sorry to butt in there, but I think Stephen Quinn at left back showed what a good player he is, where he can fill in, and he didn't look out of place, I didn't think.
Not
anyway.
At all.
Fantastic footballer he is.
Yeah, and I, as everyone that listens to the Christmas show knows, I have a very fond section of my heart devoted to Mr. Quinn. So I'm delighted to see him back in the team and back in the midfield where he belongs. Anyway, let's move on now to pub chat. I said we've got plenty of news to talk about because, gents, the transfer window has opened.
Oh, excitement for 4 weeks.
It is on. It is on, and we are going to talk about it in Pub Chat.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
First Pub Chat of the year then, gents, because obviously neither of you have spent any time in a pub-type establishment over the festive period, I'm sure.
Of course not.
Either of you doing a dry January?
No.
Screwed already.
Oh, no. Yeah,
that's never going to happen.
Well, I'm strong, but I've got a drink tonight.
Well, hey, I'll probably end up doing it by default, just because I haven't got any money left. Moving swiftly on, I said the transfer window is open. It opened on the 2nd, so clubs have until, I think, the 2nd of February to make signings and to alter any deals they have at the time being.
And it'd be the same as every year. Nothing could happen until the 2nd of February when everyone buys players.
Wouldn't occasionally get a bit of early business done.
I think you find that
Danny Caruso.
The big clubs buy players and then we just wait for the scraps and then
we do.
Clamber for them on the last day.
Well, they don't have to finalise their 25-man squads, do they, until the end of the window. So they sort of wait for that, the Premier League teams. And yeah, unfortunately, we know our place in the food chain. But right, let's start then with who should leave. Things we do have a bit more control over. Looking at the squad in general at the moment, let's start with some of the more disposable players. That is those on loan. We've got 6 loanees at the moment. Michael Hector, Lucas Pearson, Ola John, Andrew Taylor, Matty Vidra, and one I'm completely forgetting.
Alex Fernandez.
You can see why I so easily forget him. So 6 loanees there, gents. We ran a poll on thetarlhurst.com that you can go and read. In fact, you can still go and vote in as well to have your say on this. But out of those 6, which do you want to keep? Which do you want to send back?
Taylor's got to stay.
Yeah, I think I should sign him permanently.
Yeah, well, that immediately gets rid of one of the loan spots, doesn't it?
Yeah. Get him in.
Yep. Yes. Quite cover for Jordan Abita or first teamer. You know, they're both equally capable at left back. Sorts us out left back, 2 positions.
Yep, I agree.
And you've got the option then of also playing Jordan Abita further forward if you see fit.
Yep, okay. The man I just forgot, Alex Fernandez, on loan from Espanyol. Or is he technically Real Madrid? I can't remember. He's one of the 2.
He's Espanyol.
Oh, yeah. But Real Madrid had to waive their buyback clause for us to loan him. Can't believe they didn't take that up.
I don't mind him. When I've seen him play, I don't mind him at all. But at the same time, why? What's the point? He's not getting much in the way of game time. He hasn't exactly set the world alight when he has played. Like I say, I don't mind him, but he's neat and tidy. But he strikes me as more of a bit, you know, more of a sort of Jake Taylor style. In terms of neat and tidy, but nothing spectacular. He's enthusiastic. He's obviously got a good mentality about him. You know, you see him on Twitter almost every single game with the old, you know, G'ing up tweet. But what's the point? What was the point in bringing him in the first place if you're not going to play him?
Yeah, that is a point. What is the point in bringing him in if you're not going to play him? But I said this before, when you sign players from abroad, it takes them a long time to settle. And it's different football, it's different culture, it's different living arrangements, and he's not playing regularly. So I think when I've watched him, he looks like he's a good player. He's very, like I say, neat and tidy. He's obviously been grounded very well as a footballer. But probably to see the best out of him, you're going to have to wait a year, and because he's only on loan, it doesn't seem like much point in having it because he's not going to play. So he's not going to get that time.
What I find really, really frustrating is that the powder puff, in inverted commas, talent of Lucas Pearson has been given way more chance than Alex Fernandez, and they can play in similar positions. Fernandez can play as an
attacking midfielder. They played wide left, didn't he, one game?
Yeah. Well, you know, again, if you're not going to play him in his strongest position, what is the point?
I think a certain relationship with a former Chelsea manager, between a former Chelsea assistant manager and a Chelsea manager, might have had something to do with Lucas Pearson getting more game time.
Yeah.
Funny how nothing's been said, incidentally, about the old Canadian arrest warrant.
Yeah, well, we'll leave that one there.
That's why.
We'll leave that one there for good reason. You can do your internet research if you want to hear more on that. I mean, obviously he's a talented player. You don't come through the ranks at Real Madrid and then move to another Liga club if you don't have it. But again, you know, we've touched on it with Nick Blackman. In terms of where's his best position, for Alex Fernandez, I don't see where you play him in a 4-4-2. I don't think he's strong enough. I think they gave him the start at Cardiff. He did okay, but again, just struggles to impose himself on the match.
You can't just give a player one
No,
game.
No, but he doesn't strike me as a type of player that's going to adapt to be able to play in a 2.
I think he's still young enough. He's obviously talented enough to be able to adapt to a more British style of football because he's got the ability. But like I said, if he's not going to get the time and you can't give him the time because you don't want to be losing matches, there isn't much point in having him here, even though probably in years' time he could be an excellent player for us, but that's not going to happen. So like you said earlier, handbags, there's no point in having him here really.
Okay, so what's the verdict then? Keep or send back?
very harsh, but I'd say go.
Go.
Yeah, again, I don't want to say go because he looks like a good footballer, but if he's not going to play, then what's the point in having him here?
Yeah, and I'm go, again, simply on the basis that we need the spaces. And again, you don't want to waste a loan spot of a player you're not going to use. If you do see a lot of potential in him and you do think he can make an impact in a couple of years, buy him. And I know they've got that clause. I think it was about $1 million to buy him in the summer. At the moment, you wouldn't be spending that on him. But, you know, chance to watch him in training every week.
Yeah. Having said that, the obvious caveat that we haven't covered is that McDermott is a new manager. We have mentioned earlier that he doesn't really know the player. So,
but
who knows?
You say that, but he's only included him in one squad so far out of four. And he was an unused sub. So he's obviously, and during a busy period of games, I imagine he'll get that FA Cup game at Huddersfield. Yep. And that'll be his real trial. Moving on then to the man we've already mentioned, Lucas Pearson. He's actually been involved with 5 goals this season, which slightly surprised me. But Dave, me and you seem to spend every week complaining about him when he plays.
Just get rid, please.
Okay, Westy, any defence for Mr. Pearson?
Not really. When did he come off the bench the other week? Home.
The Blackburn game?
Yeah, I thought he played very well. That was probably the best game he's had for Reading. I thought he did change the match. He looked to get on the ball. But again, he's too weak. His heart never looks in it, and I don't like him. Simple as that.
I think he's very much a luxury player.
He is a luxury. He's a sort of player, like I said before, Pearson, where he'd do nothing and then do something spectacular. But when that happens, could be few and far between.
I don't think he's got anything spectacular in him.
No.
I've seen nothing to suggest that he's got anything spectacular in him. He's just a little tippy-tappy player.
I think his goal at Fulham was all right. But,
He scuffed it in at the end, didn't he? You look at it, it just Vigil
would have took it. Vigil would take it, a scuff.
So I think we're all saying send Pearson back.
Yeah, get rid of him.
His Chelsea teammate, who was signed by a manager that's been sacked and was loaned back by a manager who's been sacked, Michael Hector.
We need as many centre-backs as we can get at the moment because none of them seem to be able to stay fit for too long or on the pitch.
Yeah, just before the weekend, I was very much in the firm go camp. And if Paul McShane comes back fairly quickly, then I'd still be turning around and saying go, because his form this season just hasn't been up to scratch.
No, it's been patchy.
Particularly since the transfer to Chelsea. I think if he'd shown decent enough form to stay, you know, tactical noose that you expect from players. Nouse, whatever you want to say.
A tactical noose sounds much more painful.
Yeah, does it? Very.
I think I'll be saying stay, but the thing is, you know, he's looked very ropey, dodgy, say what you will, since that...
Ropes, nooses?
I was going to leave it, but you've gone there, so too far.
Oh, dear.
Too far. First show of the year. It's going to be the last show of the year at this rate. Carry on. Sorry, Dave.
It's all right. We'll keep this very short for now. If Paul McShane comes back fairly quickly within the next couple of weeks, then obviously it's still in the window. Let him go.
Yeah, I think that the big caveat is the fitness of Anton Ferdinand. You know, a player that's made, 10 league starts now, I think, in 2 seasons.
Yeah, you can't... Again,
can't rely on him.
No, you can't rely on him. So I would say keep Hector till the end of the season anyway.
I'd say get rid if you can line up a new permanent signing.
Yeah, if you can do that, fair enough, but I can't.
If you've got a new signing alongside McShane, Ferdinand and Cooper, you can let him go.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
But then again, you don't know how much of their wage they're paying. You know, I wouldn't be object to keeping him. I'm very much on the fence with it, so I'll take the Johnny roll and stay on the fence on that one. Moving on then to our next lucky candidate, Matty Vitra, who we spent a long time discussing earlier, so I don't think much more needs to be said. I think we're all in the stay camp.
Stay.
£2.5 million, you can't cut that short after... 5 months, and there's a view to a permanent deal at the end of the season, I believe, is there not?
No idea.
I think if Reading get promoted, yes, there is a clause. I think something like 8 or 10 million.
So you give yourself the best chance of the playoffs, then you've got to keep him.
Yeah, and then if you do get promoted, that sort of money is an absolute snip. So makes all the sense in the world. And a man who looked quite good for about half an hour against Brentford, then was tired, very, very tired in a Royston Drenthe-esque manner, Mr. Ola John.
I think he's done enough to stay.
I like Ola John, I think he worries teams. I mean, I don't think he knows what he's going to do half the time, a bit like when Kevay was here, but yeah, I think Ola John, I think he's a match winner, and you need match winners.
Yeah, agree, he's the sort of player that, I don't think he's a starter, I don't think he's starting very often, but he can give you 25 minutes, you saw against Huddersfield as well, came on and changed that game, and that's exactly what you want from your substitutes. You don't want players that need 20, 30 minutes to get into a game. He can do something, he worries defences, offers something new, so he's a perfect loan signing. I don't think at the moment he's got much chance of a permanent deal. But again, you know, if they offered us for him for $500,000 and his wage demands were reasonable, wouldn't object to giving him a year and a half deal.
We've signed worse wingers, let's put it that way. Royce and Drenner.
Can't go too many shows without his name cropping up.
No.
I notice he's injured out in Dubai at the moment.
Is he? Yeah.
He got injured just around Christmas time in Dubai. Oh.
Fall off the bar stool or something, did he?
He didn't fall off a treadmill, I'll tell you that now. right, that wraps up our six low knees. And so where else? Any other players? And you know, we've touched on Simon Cox and Jake Taylor, Aaron Cole, players like that. Out of those three, sell any of the two mentioned, you'd take a decent bid for Cox?
Yeah, I think Taylor and Cox you can let go. I think they're not going to offer you anything that we haven't already got better of as it is. So Cole, he's still got improvement in him. So no, you've got to keep him for at least a year or so, see how he progresses. But the other two, no, I think they're done.
I said,
I'd give Cox to the end of January to see what he can do. Taylor, I don't think he's got much of a future. I think he needs to. I think if Reading can get any money for him or get his wage off the books early, I think that's a good move for them. Cole is what really one to watch for the future. Don't want to see him going under any circumstances, really. Looking at the rest of the team, Paolo Hurtado, guys.
How long is his contract?
I think it was more than we'd like.
Again, I can't judge the player without really seeing him. I've seen a few flashes of him at home for 10 minutes, but again, for moving from where he's come from, it will take him ages to adapt, and to expect too much from him too soon is too much to ask, I think.
The couple of appearances that he's made that I've seen, he's looked very neat and tidy. In fact, he's looked a cut above Lucas bloody Pearson. He's just not been given the game time.
No.
I think if you can get him doing something that's a little bit different but akin to a traditional sort of English winger, then you know you might see a fair player.
I'm going to scare you two now. Paolo Hurtado's deal is 3 years.
Yeah, no, again, it'd probably take 3 years to settle.
He was 25 when he signed. I don't know if he's had his birthday.
When Nick Blackman moved from Sheffield, it took him 2 years to settle. So. You know what I mean? That's what you're dealing with.
I remember Steve Clarke at the time saying he's a creative player who could play off either side of the pitch. His style of play should complement the players already here, and we look forward to Paolo joining our squad.
Does that matter, depend on which side of the pitch the bench is?
Yeah, he can sit on either side of the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only time I've really seen him was against Everton. I think he did okay.
If you don't get game time, then you can never adapt to the football, can you? So
you can't judge the player.
We can't judge him until we've had a good look at him, and if we don't get a good look at him, then you can't judge him.
I'll say is that two managers now have had a chance to have a look at him. Neither have played him, really. You would have thought McDermott would have at least chucked him on the bench, because he's not a low knee. You know, it's not like someone like an Ola John where you can say, oh, well, we've got the five of the low knees in. Hurtado's a Reading player with a 3-year contract.
It took Bobby Convey a year to start getting regular
but at least
time.
He was given a fair. He was given a fair go, and he had other extending circumstances.
He only had what, 4 or 5 appearances in that 4 or 5 season.
He didn't have an awful lot. No, and then you've got Khan, who's come back to finish. You've got Blackman playing on the wing. You've got McCleary playing on the wing. You've got John playing on the wing. You've got Piazon playing on the wing. These players that have played in Europe or in around Europe or in England, and players that he knows. Whereas Hurtado's come from nowhere, and you're expecting him to pull up trees. I think he's got a lot to learn, and I'm sure he's got the ability to learn. He's still young, he's not old, and again, he's moved from a long way away. And
you'd hope the fact that we've signed him is indicative of the fact that there's something about the player.
Yeah.
But, at the same time, I do wonder if the whole more continental style is something that the Ties are looking at, and maybe, whisper it quietly, bestowing players on managers, I don't know.
Well, then, by the sounds of it, then...
Pure conjecture there, but...
Well, it sounds a bit. Then the two of you are saying keep.
Yeah, keep him. Yeah.
Keep him, yeah.
Okay. Anybody else then? Let's open it up just a bit wide before we move on to players coming in. Anybody else that jumps off the Reading squad sheet that you'd look to maybe move on or take a decent bit of money for?
Whether you get a decent bit of money from, I don't know. I think what he might look at is the goalkeeping situation.
I think he will. He will look at. I was just about to say if we can
get rid of one of the goalkeepers.
One of them,
good luck finding a buyer.
Ali Alapsi. Jonathan Bond, at least, you know, he's young, learning. I don't think he's going to be a top class keeper, but I think he's going to be a more than competent keeper.
Yeah, I think that's the first thing he's got to look at, because both managers now haven't been able to pick a goalkeeper, and it's still happening to this day. I mean, Bond got dropped this week, I thought rather harshly. I don't think he'd done a lot wrong, but he didn't do a lot right, you know what I mean? No. So I think you look at the stats, and we talked about earlier in the season about shots on goal and amount of goals that are going in. I don't know if you can pick stats out as you like, but it's not been good.
And he can't pick his own first choice. McDermott can't pick his own first choice. Clark can do it. So that means there isn't a first choice, which means you need to buy one.
We ran a poll of where do you think Reading should strengthen the most, position you'd like to see them strengthen the most, 36% said forwards, 33% said goalkeepers, 13% centre defence, 10% centre midfield, 7% said fullback, and only 1% said we need to sign a new winger.
No, there's plenty of wingers at the club, that's for certain.
I would pretty much agree with that. I think, as you know, getting a goalkeeper and a new forward are the two big things. Said we've talked about Sarr earlier, he's yet to fully really impress, and Reading have lacked a real striker without an outpace for a long time now. I'd really like to see them sign someone that can change a game like that in the Forster-type mould. But obviously, those type of forwards cost money.
Well, the next question is, if Blackman was to leave in the transfer window, which might happen, there's a few rumours that he could go to Derby or Everton, then you're going to have to replace him. Because if you don't, where's your goals coming from?
Yeah, I think Reading will hang on to him. I don't think they'll cash in. I think especially with McDermott coming back, who signed him.
I don't know, I think they might. Depends on the player, doesn't it? Depends what he says to him. If he says to him, look, I'm going to leave at the end of the year anyway, they might think, well, you might as well go now then.
Depends on the offer as well.
Yeah,
we'll have to see. Well, we had a few tweets in on the issue. Sam Lomax said, should Reading consider a loan bid for Alex McCarthy, seeing he's getting no playing time at Crystal Palace? Would you see McCarthy back for 6 months?
They should try and re-sign him.
Permanently?
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to move club for the third time in 18 months, though.
He might do if it's first team football. If I was going to be a first team regular, I'd move clubs.
Better than the other two, isn't he?
Exactly.
6 months, worth pump.
Yeah, he's much better than the other two.
Yep. Again, you'd have to get loanies off the books, though, first, because, again, you don't want an even bigger log jam.
That's right. Piazon, Fernandez, Hector.
If we can send them back, that is. Should a caveat of that, really. Obviously, it takes two to tango, and I don't know if the clubs are going to be so keen to get them back. I wouldn't be against it at all. Brian Davis says, not too much needs to be done in January. Just need to start playing right players in right positions. A lot of how we do the rest of the year will come down to the coaching and management of this already large squad. We have more than enough quality in it. Goalkeeper, my main worry. Al Habsi is terrible. Gary Woodward said, need a defensive midfielder. Like Tish Bowler breaking up the play and doing the dirty stuff. Williams, not effective at the moment. So maybe already an internal candidate there, but an enforcer, gentlemen. I think, you know, there are a few rumours linking us with Steve Sidwell. Nothing substantial, but I think they could do with a real type of player like that.
I think we have missed that type of player. I think Tish Bowler was looking back, massively underrated in many ways.
He was doing a very quiet Leisurewood type role, wasn't he?
Yes, exactly. And I think a player like that would certainly bring out the best in Ollie Norwood.
Yep.
I think it's harsh on Williams. I don't think he's been ineffective.
No, not at all. I think Tish is bigger. He's stronger, though. And I think he's more refined to that sort of role, just sitting in front of the back front of the back four.
I get what you're saying, but again, I think it depends. It's one of those horses for courses ones, because I think Williams, especially when you're losing, he will drive the team. He tries to push them forward, doesn't he? Whereas Tish Bowler will sit and break up the play.
Depends on what you're doing.
My only problem with Williams is I don't know if he's got enough end product for me. I was looking earlier, he's made 4 goal assists in 3 years.
Yeah, he hasn't got end product, no. But he's got drive.
He's got a fair few goals to him.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he creates enough. But then, as I said, maybe that's not his role. So, not that anyway, I'm happy with Danny Williams, but I just think they could possibly get a bit of an upgrade or a different option in there.
Yeah, I have to be said, I've been slightly disappointed with him this season in terms of form, in terms of what he's actually done. Absolutely, you can't fault his commitment, can't fault his drive, can't fault what he wants to do. I do think he holds on to the ball a lot, far too long sometimes. You're absolutely right. He doesn't create enough and doesn't do enough in the final third. Having said that, he's been working on it. He's a bit of working on it, and he's capable of scoring.
And he's finally getting a decent run of fitness as well. He obviously had a lot of injury problems in his first couple of years, so good to see him staying fit. And he's been asked to play a lot of games too as well. That's probably not helped.
Yeah.
With Tish Bowler being out and other injuries, and Fernandez not being deemed the answer. So hopefully, again, just deciding again, just to give people break. Like that could be effective. You know, you saw what the likes of Hayden Mullins did when Mullins stepped in the back end of that 11-12 campaign. Just when we had an injury, when Carachan, I think, was he signed just before or just after Carachan got cropped?
It was just after, wasn't it? I think Leisurewood cropped at the same time.
I remember they were both out because at Southampton, I think we were playing Mullins and Tab.
Yeah, we were.
At the same time. So you do need at least 4 of those midfielders. And if Fernandez isn't the answer, then I think you need someone to complement Tish Bowler, Norwood and Williams. I know Quinn can play there, but got other plans for him. I think that just about wraps it up. I said it's always difficult. I know, you know, people tune into this and they come onto the website and they look for names, and it's never really been Reading's way to go out and be linked with names, has it? For all the time, I can't really remember a lot of signings that were really signposted that you were just waiting to happen.
It'd be interesting. I mean, McDermott's been travelling around Europe for the last 2 years as an Arsenal scout. It'd be interesting to see if he see anyone there that he could pick up rather quietly.
You wonder what eyes he's looking at players, though, with, because he's looking at them through Arsenal eyes. It's probably a very different set of criteria, but you like to think that he maybe kept a couple.
Yeah, isn't that a bit of a rough diamond somewhere, you know?
Yeah, and obviously the club invested in a new head of recruitment, I think, at the start of the year as well. So he's obviously been busy going away, doing bits and pieces, and they've got Chris Davidson, who's probably been looking at players for Liverpool and Swansea. So they've got lots of new ideas.
Yeah, again, just going back to Brian Davis's post, I agree with all of that. I think that there's more than enough in that squad to be a really effective side if coached and managed properly. And I think that's all I need to do. I don't think they need a lot of signings. Decent goalkeeper, that would be good enough for me.
Fair enough. Well, we shall wait and see what happens. So you can keep up to date with all the transfer news over on the tarlesson.co.uk, and obviously we'll round up any as we get it here on the show, on the Podcast Extra with Charles later in the week. In the meantime, let's move on to some more of your thoughts in the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Right, mailbag time. Thank you very much to all of you who got in touch via Twitter, Facebook, and to the email at thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. I said plenty coming in over the festive period, so thank you very much indeed. We'll start with Jack Killick, who emailed in saying, lots of talk of signing a new striker. Personally, I just think we should play Blackman up front every game. He obviously doesn't want to play in right midfield. McCleary is definitely better there, as he showed on Saturday. Personally, I think we need a goalkeeper and cover for Gunter. I'd much rather spend most of the funds on a quality keeper rather than a striker who may not be used that much. Thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with all of that. There's nothing to disagree with, I don't think. Oh, well, maybe Blackman debate still rages on, but I don't think there's any other striker scoring at the moment, so you might as well give him a go.
Yeah, cover for right back was one I did want to bring up in the pub chat, actually, Dave, I think.
Yeah, that's something that crossed my mind at the time and totally forgot. I think, yes, Gunter does need cover. There's no one else that we can really play there. Hector played there for a while, didn't he? Was it Hull, wasn't it?
Yeah.
When we were...
It lost us the game, really,
didn't decimated it? In defence that day. He has played there before, but he's not a full-on right back. He do need a specialist fullback to at least cover.
Yeah, I agree. Will Reid says, really enjoy the show. My question is, should Simon Cox be given another chance? Should we move on, considering he's not seen to be setting the world alight on loan? I think we covered that one pretty well there. Matt Waller says, what do you think of the new screen and videos? All seems much improved to me.
What's the point? Honestly, there's a whole load of expense spent on a nice HD TV. What's the point?
As a tech lover, I love it. I think it's great. However, my one thing is that when I'm sat there before the game, am I the only one that thinks I'm sat in a cinema?
Yeah.
With all the different little videos and musics and stuff and Postman Pat.
Yeah.
That's something I was going to bring up. You know, I've walked in. I don't normally get there pretty much right on kickoff, as you know.
Yeah.
Walk in just as the players coming out. You know, literally going to spend as little time in the ground as I possibly can. I wasn't feeling that great on Saturday, so I got in about 10, 15 minutes before kickoff, and I walk in, and you know, forgetting the videos and stuff, just as I walk in, there's like this really sort of slow, sort of easy listening music. And if you put a load of sort of rap lyrics over it, it could almost be something from Cypress Hill, Stroke Smoking the Split. The next thing that comes on, they've got this bloody video on the sort of Royal Mail, and they're playing flipping Postman Pat over the bloody top of it.
It's weird.
Hell? This is 10 minutes before flipping kickoff. This is the point in time where they need to be really trying to ramp up, you know, crowd and atmosphere. And it's like, you're playing Postman Pat.
I think we've got the open for the
show
there,
Westy. What the hell is going on?
Well, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I might have to try and find the music for that. As I said, I just think it's like being in a cinema. I keep waiting for the lights to get dimmed.
Do you know what made me laugh? We talk about the screen. Someone said to me, but it's not the same colour as what I can see with my eyes.
Do you know what that's ever?
Which, yeah, I thought was a weird thing to say.
Though, in saying that, sometimes when you're actually sat there watching it, and, you know, I sit in Y25... a row in front of our bags and we're right next to the screen, sometimes it does actually look better than watching that actually in front of you.
I watched it on telly, it was a better game.
Funny you mentioned about being in cinema, you're waiting for the curtains to open, and a lot of the time in 2015 I was waiting for the curtains to close.
Yeah, I'm a fan, but obviously not everyone is.
Well, just
okay, well, you don't like Postman Pat.
I think his answer's, yeah, he's quick.
What's
he's
wrong
saying
with the old one?
Is why. Yeah.
What's the point?
Basically,
Alex Fernandez.
My end reason is this: more video good if it means less mega party.
Yeah, the other thing is, handbags, all you've got to remember is the massive overspend on equipment we've had here recently as well. Yeah. It tells you all you need to know about Wim's opinion on the TV screen.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm putting in a massive HD monitor for us soon.
Having said that, happy with the replays, but then you can play yeah. replays on the old screen.
True.
I just I don't know why they spent so much money on that.
No, we don't know how much they spent.
Well, it's why, you know, it could be a week on all of John's wages or something.
Yeah.
it's probably only about 2 days of Royston Trenters. So, anyway, it's infrastructure. Money well spent. I don't mind money going on infrastructure.
It's probably,
tax. Progress, Dave.
It's a tax.
It's progress. We could have just brought the old one back, you know, the old thin one that had the ref pop up with the yellow card.
Oh, yeah.
The old Pixel one.
That was good, that one. Bring that
the
back.
The original one.
Absolutely.
Downgrade.
Yes. Yeah.
Commodore 64 graphics.
That was a second-hand jobby as well, wasn't it?
Was it?
Yeah, a second-hand jobby from some United States baseball stadium.
Yeah, that's amazing. Right, it was, yeah. I reckon that's in Modesty's home now as his TV screen.
Do you know what? It probably is, actually.
Non-definition.
Wigan Athletic have got one. They've still got it, actually. I'm sure it's exactly the same model as of scoreboard as that.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you remember the first game? That they actually, I'm sure it was Wigan Athletic at home in 1998. And Wigan scored after about 5 minutes and they got it wrong and they didn't know how to change it, so they just turned it off.
Stuck a bit of tape over it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, don't worry, Wigan haven't scored. You know, it's not on the scoreboard. It's still 0-0, lads.
Sounds incredibly Reading to me. Right, moving on. Matt Williams. Has there ever been a Reading squad where so many players divided fan opinion? Gunter, Vidra, Blackman, etc. And also the second part says, what do you see being part of the identity Brian wants to build? Is a key part never scoring from corners?
Well, I think that identity was already here. So I think the key part of identity he's trying to build is just getting a side together that all belong to us and they're not yeah. here on loan, yeah. basically.
And I think the style of play and certainly over the last 20 years under Pardew and Coppell and Brian McDermott to a slightly lesser extent, we've gone out and we've said to teams, this is how we play, beat us.
Yeah.
And we didn't do that in the club. We set up for the opposition.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the heart thing as well. The really sad thing for me over the past few seasons amongst the general losing and not being very good was how few times we came back from behind, even to get a point. You know, you can count on one hand the amount of times we came from behind to win a game, even drawing a game. There was just so little fight, and it was a case of almost to what you were saying, Dave. Yo, we've set up for our plan. Oh, our plan hasn't worked. I don't know how we're going to deal with this. Whereas at least Brian McDermott teams, even in the Premier League, you know, they were getting outclassed by teams like West Brom, like Chelsea. And they came back and they got results in those games.
They gave it 100% attack in the end, yeah. really, didn't they?
Yeah.
And that's not something they've done in recent years. So, and I was glad to see that last minute goal go in because it just gave you a little bit of a reminder of what they can do. So, but in terms of Reading player that a squad that with players that divide fan opinion, I think that's always been the case. You go back a few years, you had Kebe, McEnough, Leisurewood.
Yeah.
Doing the same.
Even James Harper, 350 games for Reading.
Yeah.
Divided opinion.
Okay, games like that. People like Stephen Hunt, even dividing opinion.
Yep. John Oster.
Yeah, Lira Lita.
Absolutely.
Gawkes.
Yeah. So I think it's always been a case. I think it's just because we've got a bigger squad, I think.
Phil Whitehead.
Yeah. Scott Howie.
He didn't divide Scott opinion. Howie. Everybody knew he was crap.
We all knew he was bad.
I think it's just been a case.
Tony Rougier.
In the rain. I just think it's been a case of that the squad's bigger this year. So obviously there's more people to... it's not the case of... You know, in that 05-06 squad was about, what, 17, 18? Like first team and then a few youngsters?
Yeah. Well, you can rattle off that first 11 straight away.
Well, it was weird because I tweeted that, you know, I was in hospitality on Saturday and showed my table number as 8.
Keep bringing it up,
yeah. and someone else tweeted that they were at the hospitality other end and they were on table 19. Can you remember who 19 was in that team?
19 was Kevin Doyle. Is that right?
No.
0506?
No.
Chris Makin.
I'm going to double check.
So I'm sure Kevin Doyle was number 19 and he dropped 10 numbers, yeah. didn't he, the next season?
Might be right there.
You might be right. I'm going to have to scroll back through my thing. But anyway, the number wasn't very high. It was in the low teens and it was Johnny Haynes.
19.
I'm going to have to look this up. This is going to be really boring for the listeners. But anyway, while I look that up, I'm going to read our final question. He said, should Brian McDermott be given... That's from Samuel Wass. He says, should Brian McDermott be given 4 years in which no matter what happens, he won't be sacked, or is he only a placeholder? Basically, should he be given 4 years no matter what happens to put a project in place?
Getting relegated from the Championship, I think he's... He, well, circumstances obviously dictate, but I think if we're looking at getting relegated from the Championship, then maybe his job should be on the line.
Mourinho doesn't get 4 years, so I don't think Brian McDermott's going to get 4 years, do you?
I'll interject, you are 100% right, Dave. It was 20, Johnny Haynes. But my point basically was, is that if you're getting up to 20 and it's only Johnny Haynes, it shows how thin the squad was back then.
Yeah.
Although he's made a good career for himself in...
Shane Long was 24.
See, my knowledge of that 2005-06 team, is, and I've mentioned this on the show before, I was so many hundreds of miles away that just, it was ironically falling out of love with the club at the wrong time.
Oh, no.
Disaster.
It was a disaster. I think, as I said, the tipping point for me is I came back from my Christmas holidays and tried to go to the Cardiff game, couldn't get in. Tickets are sold out. I was outraged.
I bet you was fuming.
I'd sat and watched so much awful, awful football at Elm Park in the Wembley Stadium to be turned away for a bunch of half-season ticket holders jumping on the bandwagon. I was fuming.
And you missed one of the best performances of the season as well.
5-1, was it?
5-1.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like 10 goals past Cardiff that season.
Good old Cardiff. Don't worry, I came back. The season I came back, we got relegated. So there we go.
Jonah.
You can send me away more often. Anyway, in terms of Brian McDermott... You have to give him a decent amount of time, but you're absolutely right. If they're staring relegation in the face, doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter, as we've seen in the Premier League, if people like Gary Monk and Jose Mourinho can get sacked, nobody's safe anymore.
No.
Absolutely nobody. There is all loyalty has gone out of the game.
No sentiment in football.
I think the absolute lowest you can go, Reading in this day and age now, is bottom half Championship. If you're not securing bottom half Championship, at least a bare minimum, then your job's on the line.
Yeah.
You know, you can't afford to get relegated.
No. Well, we've had some late tweets in. You know, we don't mind. We like being popular, but get them in early. That's all I say. But thank you anyway. Mark Sugar says, if you haven't discussed it by the time you get to this, thoughts on Al Habsi coming in again to replace Bond?
Again,
I think we covered it.
Much of a muchness.
Yeah. Ben Prin said, should a national holiday be declared if Reading score from a corner? Absolutely. I'll take any excuse to be in bed. And he also says, couldn't believe the number of people leaving early on Saturday. Surely chance of a winning goal is better than beating traffic. Again, I think this one is one we've covered a few times. If you want to leave, look, it's your own loss if you leave early, isn't it?
Yeah. I've never understood it, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's your own loss. But at the same time, you know, we've now got Brian McDermott in charge and we know how many times we scored last-minute goals when he was in charge before.
Yeah. Not that I could particularly blame them, because you didn't get the sense in the last 10 minutes of Reading we're going to
No, you didn't see it coming, I must admit.
In fact, if anything, and we didn't talk about it in the recap, but... Bristol City's goal, inverted commas, I've looked at it a few times on the replay, the one that was ruled out for offside, it's very tight.
It is tight, but the best thing I heard about it was matey on the radio said that I think Al Habsi already knew it was offside. And when you watch the replay...
No, he didn't.
He flaps
no,
at he it. Did then not. He's looked over at the linesman and say,
it is a horrible. It is a horrible attempt of a save. He just palms it weakly in the air and
doesn't
it
matter.
Drops in.
Doesn't matter.
Anyway, Lucy Taylor, if Vidra had the chance he had on Saturday weeks ago, he'd be our top scorer. Brian's clearly checking out the squad. Cooper equals ace.
If I had the chance this Matty Vidra had for a couple of weeks ago, I'd be top scorer.
You would. Dave McCormack, if it's not too late, question, how much faith do you put into stats as to how good a player is?
Again, we discussed stats before. It depends who's compiling them and why they're compiling them.
Well, this debate comes, I think, in part from a Twitter debate we had earlier today of someone from the Brentford game. Our player rater, Bucks Royal, gave Oliver Norwood a 5. Now, not a lot of people. A lot of people disagreed with that and said he was great. And if you go onto the Who Scored, who give player ratings by metrics and things like that, they gave him, I think he was Reading's man of the match. Now, the counter argument that I put, and Bucks did as well, is that doesn't take into account things like not tracking your man. That's the amount of passes you complete, distance and things like that. So, stats can tell you a lot, but you still have to watch a game. For me, you can't completely disregard it.
It's like yards covered. I mean, that could mean you're nowhere near the game. You're just running around like a headless chicken.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean anything.
No. They're very important. I think you've just got to take them both in balance. I think they can... But stats are, you know, same thing. You can twist them any way you like.
Of course you can.
Well, exactly. Here we go. You've got to take a look at Lucas Pearson.
Yeah.
This season.
Well, there you go.
Was it 3 goals and five? 3 goals and 3 assists, 3 goals, 5 assists, and what have you? But
we'll
beat him.
We'll beat on them stats.
I think stats can sometimes give you cause to
your all-round games.
Yeah,
come into
of course it has, yeah.
into perspective.
I mean, they are very useful because they can show over time trends and things like that that you can't pick up and give you reason to be more optimistic or a bit more down on a player. But it's what they do on the pitch week in week out.
2004-05, I think Paul Brooker was up there with our leading assist. assist makers. Would anybody else have him back now?
No,
obviously not.
Certainly not now.
Definitely not now.
If you had him, if you had him back then, you know, sort of 10 years younger, and had him, and had the choice of that chance of having him now, I wouldn't.
No,
he was one of the best crossers of a ball I've seen at Reading Football Club.
But it's also
maintain that. But
it's like the pass is completed. I mean, I could stand 10 yards away from you, pass this all day long. It doesn't mean I've actually done anything with the ball. It just means I've completed a pass.
Exactly.
Well, there was
back
a stat.
To the old assisting analogy. You take Paul Brooker. Paul Brooker was a winger who could never take his man on, but given the ball in the right area. He would, you know, with a cross, he would invariably put in an extremely dangerous ball. But I'd rather have Gareth McCleary.
Yeah, well, Becker
who can take on that man.
So Becker made a career out of that. So
yeah, use them both hand in hand. I said, don't put too much faith in one or the other, because your eyes can play tricks on you, and so can numbers on a piece of paper. So the trick is trying to get a good balance between the two.
There are lies, damn lies, and statistics.
There you go. And finally, Andrew Stagg. Actually, sorry, penultimately. I'll keep jumping the gun here. And now I've lost the tweet. I've got it. He says, thoughts on disappearance of Terry Burton, Fernandez and Hurtado. I think we've covered all of those three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Is he suggesting they've disappeared together?
That's
some conspiracy theory. I like it.
I would imagine that'll make a good reality TV show.
Good headline as well. Gone for a Burton. I don't know why I didn't use that one.
Oh, God. Anyway. Matt Castle finishes off the mailbag with, do you think Brian McDermott will take more of a long-term view to building his team this time around, or will he be pressured into repeating his previously successful approach by the board and fans?
Again, I think he's already got a good squad. It just needs to get him winning.
He's already got a good squad. I think last time he was... his hand was forced in many ways. The club and the fans, they wanted their cake and ate it. He had to get rid of Long, he had to get rid of Sigurdsson to balance the books, and then when we got up, we had to go and spend a shed load of money, and he didn't have it.
No.
So, I think you can't really compare now to then.
No.
Simple as that.
The thing is, he knows, and we touched on this earlier, he knows he's not got, he can't undertake a huge rebuilding project. Because the owners just aren't going to give him the time. Fans can talk all they want about how much they love Brian McDermott, and I believe they do. Well, a lot of them do anyway, not everybody. But they're not going to be sat there happy for rebuilding.
No.
Look how quickly fans got antsy under Brendan Rodgers. They were not prepared to sit through that rebuilding project. For better or worse, they gave him 4 months, fans.
It's not going to happen. And I bet, because a lot of these people, our listeners, have been writing to us for a long time, and I bet they were the same people that were saying sack him not so long ago. So you don't get a lot of time in football, and we can say how much we love him now, but if things start going wrong, they lose 10 games on the bounce,
you can afford to move sideways a little bit, maybe half a step back, but you just can't afford to take 2 steps back, even if it means taking 5 steps forward anymore.
And also,
I can't do it.
I think everyone agrees that they've got a good squad of players there, so the buck falls with the manager. If you've got a good set of players, a good squad, you should be winning. So
I think you've got to also remember that these are the same fans that booed Brian McDermott and the Aston Villa game in 2013.
Exactly.
I was driving back the other day, and a thought cropped into my head that I think it's a bit of a shame. I know might sound a bit weird, and it's probably because we've been recording for over an hour and I've lost my marbles. But, you know, players can get dropped and rested and stuff, but managers can't.
Nope.
And I think that's what Brian McDermott needed last time. It would have been great to be able to take Brian McDermott out of the firing line for 6 months and he'd come back refreshed. But obviously, you know, managers can't do that. You know, they go, they get sacked. But as we've seen increasingly now, managers are going back. Be it Brian McDermott, be it Jose Mourinho, be it Eddie Howe. Doesn't always work out. But yeah, sometimes they just need a break, and hopefully he's learnt a lot. But that's a discussion for another day. As I said, that just about ends the mailbag. Thank you very much to all of you who sent in your tweets to @thetarlhurstend, especially those that use the TTE podcast hashtag. If I haven't read out your tweet, it's probably because you haven't used it, or I've just missed you, so I have many apologies. And otherwise, yep, @thetarlhurstend on Twitter, facebook.com/tarlhurstend, and thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. In the meantime, we'll preview the Huddersfield FA Cup game and just go on to a couple of bits of any other business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any other business.
Okay, so Championship takes a back seat for a week as we begin, hopefully, another run to Wembley. And this time, I've cleared the date for the semi-final. So you know what that means.
Don't get married.
Yeah.
Too late. We're all That means we're going to go out in the third round this time. It is exactly the same tie as we started our journey last year. It is Huddersfield away. A team we've already played this season. We drew 2-2 with them, scraping that late equaliser through Ola John. Huddersfield, their recent form's good. They've won 4 out of the last 7. They're only 5 points and 6 places behind us in the league, so not an awful lot between the teams anymore. Their last game saw them win 2-0 at Bolton, and they've not really changed an awful lot since we played them in the league. Gents, what do you remember from that day, and do you think they'll be much of a threat to us on Saturday?
Well, not just from that day. I watched them over the last couple of weeks, and they're playing some really nice football. I mean, they're creating chances and they're scoring goals, and again, Naki Wells seems to have a nasty habit of scoring against Reading. I said this last time and it could come to fruition.
Had handed both goals, didn't he?
He did, yeah. So again, Huddersfield playing some nice football, and I think this would be a test for Reading, a real test.
Dave?
Yep, pretty much that. I mean, they have had one change. Obviously, that was the game at the Medeski. It was Chris Powell's last game in charge. I wasn't there that night. I've already Tuesday night to coincide with my college course. But, you know, from what I understand, they played extremely well. I think possibly they knew that that Powell was going, given that I know that that Powell was going on a golfing holiday the next day. But so they got the old Borussia Dortmund assistant manager, haven't they, who was there with Jurgen Klopp. So, you know, you kind of think that he knows a thing or two about football. He's obviously got them playing really well. Their form's really good. They got some really some really good players, actually. I mean, the only one on the previous lineup, they got brought on Mustafa Carriol after 85 minutes, didn't they? He's gone back to Borough. But the rest of them, you look at Harry Bunn, he's had some superb games against us. Jonathan Hogg, Emma Hughes, Sean Scannell. They're all good championship
defense
players
as well, with Smith,
yeah,
and Hudson.
Smith, is that Joel Lynch?
I believe so.
Naki Wells. They're a good side. They're a very good side, and you know, I have wondered to an extent why they are so low in the table. I think it's probably because Chris Powell is actually quite a limited manager at championship level. They've gone that one step higher, it seems, and hopefully for them, because I don't mind Huddersfield as a club, you know, they can start pushing on with Wagner in charge. See what happens.
Okay, so how do we see this one going? This will not count in the Tala Stem Prediction League, of which there has been a fair bit of movement over the Christmas period. The standings now are at the top, Charles Watts and myself, we're on 17 points. In second is Johnny on 14, but making a charge is Alan West, who correctly predicted a 1-0 win. Snatched that
as a course of celebration.
3 points late on. You are now up to 11, so within striking distance of the Champions League, of the top three. Well, you're already in it, in fourth place. Celebrate your trophy like Arsenal do.
Not bad out of five.
And Dave, you didn't have a bad festive period. You got three correct results, but not the scoreline. So you've moved up to 8 points. But considering you missed half the season, you used to be within touching distance of Westie's pretty good.
It's not.
What's that say about you?
Yeah, it doesn't say very much. Do you know what? You know, I said I was going to start backing them to lose, and I changed that tactic, and if I'd have done it, I'd have been all right. But no, I've gone back to my previous ways of thinking they're going to win every match.
Too positive. Yeah.
So, as is established doctrine, FA Cup games do not count for the Prediction League. But I will, anyway, a chance to earn some pride points. And to gripe at me next week when I remind you that they don't count. Predictions? Dave, we'll start with you.
After last season, it's always going to be a bit of a low, isn't it? 3-1 defeat.
Westy?
Yeah, I think they get beat as well. Just say 2-0.
Yeah, I'm saying a 1-0 defeat. So you can't blame us if they lose this one. We told you it was coming. I will get Johnny's prediction. Well, I probably won't, actually, because it doesn't count. I'll get Charles's thoughts on the game on the podcast extra on Friday as well. Hopefully that the return of that show. We were going to try and do one last Friday, but again, new year and all that jazz. We couldn't record, so, you know, Charles's fees have gone up in 2016 as well, I'm sure. Needs extra bonuses with another one on the way. Anyway, that just about wraps up this show. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining me. As I said, if you have listened, and again, if you've got quotes or questions or feedback on the audio or the content or just us in general, you know, hate mail is always welcome. any mail is welcome. We like the attention. Any comments, as I said, please bear with us. As I said, we're in the middle of our revamp. We're going to try and up it over the next few weeks. Still got a few pieces of equipment to come, so thank you for bearing with us, and most of all, thank you for those of you who have helped make this happen, who've put your hard-earned cash on the line to boost this unprofessional joke of a podcast.
Yep. I'm sorry, Tim, for saying you should resign. Just refine your opinions, mate.
There you go. Ooh, we love you really,
that was
Tim.
That was a climb down.
That was a climb down. Yeah. He's not listening by this point. He's already gone off to write an angry letter.
Yeah, it's too late. Yeah, it's too late.
He's gone on Hobnob to complain about that Handbags Harris character.
Who is he? Why doesn't he use his real name?
Is he the
why is my face not on the Tyler Stone podcast? Yeah, exactly.
Why does he always turn into a giant green monster? Is he the Incredible Hulk?
Opinions like that.
No, as I said, thank you very much to those of you who have stumped up your cash. But again, beyond that, everyone who downloads and listens, we very much appreciate it. We wouldn't be still doing this in 2016 had you not continued to listen. So thank you very much. And please do go and check out that Shaq Hislop interview. It is well worth your time, even if you can't stand my voice. I'm only in it for a very brief time. So give you time and over to one of Reading's greatest ever goalkeepers.
Seconded.
Indeed.
Interesting revelations about Jack Warner.
Yeah, very much so, and not on the ones you would think. So, yeah, go check that one out. As for us, we'll be back either Sunday or Monday. I've got to discuss an appropriate recording time, but needless to say, we will be back next week to discuss the Huddersfield game and look ahead to Derby, which is going to be a real tough test, needless to say. So thank you very much for tuning in and listening. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, check out thetarlhurst.com for plenty more content. And in the meantime, come on, you arse. It's funny how the crowd's always been